Hey, everybody, welcome to 2 of the 1st. It's April 10th, 2024. I'm Ryan Ballagy. Thanks for being here. It's been a heck of a Masters week. Hope you're enjoying it. We've had plenty to talk about. The par 3 contest is going on right now. I'm watching it on TV. And then the whole thing gets started tomorrow, and the madness gets underway, which will be the 2024 Masters Tournament. 89 players competing. Most of them are taking part in some fashion in the par 3 contest today, but there are some who are not. And that's because either they just want to get final preparations done, they don't want the distraction, they don't want the possibility of winning. Although it was kind of funny, I was watching Jake Knapp, who was doing a walk and talk. Well, he was really standing and talking, but doing it with the, you know, the earbuds in, right? With the Apple earphones in. And the AirPods. And he was talking about, you know, enjoying the moment, being able to play. And Sean McDonough is doing the commentary for ESPN and asks him, you know, how are you going about this? Are you trying to win? Do you care about the curse? He's like, oh, I already had my, you know, brother-in-law or brother or something hit a shot, so I'm already out of it. We're good. Which I really enjoy, because while this thing has turned into a great family event, and it's really cool to see different generations of families come together, like Ben Crenshaw's grandson made like a 45 footer after Ben basically gave him the line and he hit it a foot because it's that fast. That was cool. And then Gary Woodland made a hole in one with his children and his wife there, which was great. They were all kind of wearing the jumpsuits and all that stuff's great. I really, really enjoy that. But all of that happens in service of not winning the par 3 contest. Like if for some reason it was the opposite and that winning the par 3 contest was hyper predictive of winning the Masters, You would see the exact opposite. There would not be family. There would not be fun, not smiles. It'd be the opposite. But because no one wants to win, because no one who's won the par 3 contest has won the Masters that following Sunday, or Monday for that matter, then they want to make sure they get disqualified right away. So the curse makes it possible. So thank you to the par 3 contest curse. And if you ever want to hear the story about why that's cursed, or why some people who are Augusta members and, Augusta historians think it's a curse, well, look up Clifford Roberts and what happened to the end of his life. It's a strange story, but I think a lot of people believe that the kind of curses related to that in some fashion, although I don't think that's true at all. I don't believe in curses like that. That all said, it's a great day, great time. It seems like it's pretty lighthearted. And I want to talk about a couple of things that related to things happening today, news conference-wise, and then someone who showed up at Augusta National. And so I think we'll start with who showed up, and that was Greg Norman. He showed up today to Augusta National Golf Club, and I was pretty surprised about that, to read about that. Now, there are two outlets that covered that. That was Australian Golf Digest, Evan Priest, who also does stuff for Golf Digest here in America, does a good job, but he's from Australia. So he's kind of looking out for these types of Aussie-based stories, and I would argue that LIV Golf commissioner showing up to the Masters somewhat uninvited is a bigger story than that, and then just a regional story or a continental story. But also the Washington Post, Rick Massey, who's a local guy who used to do sports with the Baltimore Sun, I've been reading him forever, he does a great job with golf coverage. He has some ins. He's got some. I don't know who they are, but he's got some ins. And he probably got word that, hey, Greg Norman's here, and went out and found him and talked to him for a little bit. So both of them did pieces. From the way that both were written, it seems like Rick Massey found about it first, had a little chit-chat with Greg Norman, reported on that, and then Evan got a little bit extra from it. Again, timeline doesn't particularly matter, but the way stories are written like that, you can kind of get a sense of, especially if, you know, two guys are cordial and get along well and, you know, don't view it as some kind of like massive competitive lens, then, you know, Rick probably found him, talked to him, and then Evan was like, yeah, I'll come in and clean up from the Australian angle or whatever. So Norman's there. He shows up, apparently shows up to the gates as a ticketed patron. That's what the Washington Post reported. He was not invited by the club. He was not invited by a corporate sponsor of the tournament. He was just there as a ticketed patron showing up. And one of the quotes he gave is basically that, or at least this was written in the Washington Post, or not a quote he gave, but he wasn't going to wait to be invited by Augusta National. So he showed up flanked by a couple of LIV Golf executives, ticketed patrons, show up, get in, go have a day. And apparently was walking the grounds with those two executives, I guess two executives is that's how I read it. And a security guard was there at the time. So I assume that once it was clear Greg Norman was coming, that Augusta decided, hey, this guy might need a little protection from himself and from others, kind of type deal. And they were going to flank him over the course of the day just to make sure there was no stunt done, but also that no one did anything untoward. The guy who is ultimately a guest of the club. If you're a ticket-holding patron, you are a guest of Augusta National Golf Club, and they treat you as such, no matter who you are, so long as you follow the rules. And that seems to kind of be the genesis of having that security guard there. But Norman told Rick Massey that he was there to support LIV players. He went and saw a number of them play, practice. Rahm, Garcia, Reed, he went up to Minwoo Lee, who's Australian, and went and said hi to him. And, because there's some kind of connection there, and he probably wants to try to recruit Minwoo Lee at some point. Let's just be honest. But that he was there to kind of let him know, hey, the boss has got your back. And I think that's kind of the line he used, more or less. The boss has got your back. And if you do want to read, I know a lot of Washington Post stuff is behind paywall, and you, at least I could read it when I went and checked it out. And we did do a blog post on it for golfnewsnet.com, just to kind of, old school blog post. That's why I say blog post, like, oh, someone else did the work, but you're not going to find it. So let's explain it and then point you in the right direction to go read more, kind of deal. I find that interesting. I find the timing of that interesting, especially after last year, Fred Ridley, who's the chairman of Augusta National, we're going to talk about him for the second half of the show. He explicitly said that Greg Norman had not been extended an invitation by the club to come attend the tournament this year, despite being close call in 86 and 96, despite being a former world number one, despite being a two-time major champion. They didn't basically want the distraction. They didn't want the mess that was going to come with him showing up. And what happens, he shows up. And I think that's pretty interesting. So I don't know what the point is. I mean, Norman even went to say, I believe, to Evan Priest that he is in the dark on what's happening in the negotiations, that he doesn't really know what's happening. Now, I don't believe that entirely. I think he has an idea, a vague idea of what's going on, because he met with Steve Cohen, who's the owner of the Mets, part of the strategic sports group that's invested in the PGA Tour. So there's clearly been some exchange of knowledge there. You kind of have to take Norman with a grain of salt. But just a weird stunt to kind of pull the day before the Masters and bring some attention to himself. He was wearing a shark, his shark straw hat in white. It wasn't like he was slinking around in a overcoat and trying to not, blend in or anything. He looked like Greg Norman, and that seemed pretty obvious. Norman said no one came up to him and questioned him about LIV Golf. Well, that's not going to happen at the Masters. That's a surefire way to get thrown out, so that's not really particularly telling. I just thought it was very interesting, and I was thinking about kind of second topic, so to speak, to have for today's show. And then I saw this, and lo and behold, we got a second topic. So wanted to leave with that because it didn't take too much time to talk about, but just kind of a weird thing. That all said, take a quick break to transition to the second topic. And before that second topic, let's talk about 20s. Check them out, 20s.co. Use the promo code GolfNewsNet25. Save 25% off your first order. As I mentioned in show earlier in the week on Monday, if you sign up for their SMS, their text list, text alerts, you will get a 50% off coupon code 2 days early for use basically the next couple days on anything that they have that's kind of floral print. They have a bunch of stuff that's beautiful floral print. So check them out, 20s.co. Use my promo code. Hey, I'll be happy. They'll notice. But if you want to save 25% more, an additional 25%, so 50% in total, then I would sign up for that text list real quick. Anyhow, all right. Fred Ridley talked this morning, at Augusta National Golf Club. This is a standard thing that the chairman of the Masters Tournament and Augusta National Golf Club, and they're one and the same, does every year. Ridley's the 7th chairman in the history of the club. He is the 1975 U.S. Amateur Champion. He's played in the Masters. He's an accomplished player. He's the president of the USGA. He's done a lot in golf and in service of golf over the course of his career. He is a tremendously successful private citizen. This is not his full-time job. I mean, in a way, it is his full-time job, but it's not technically not meant to be a full-time job. Kind of is. And he has this kind of catbird seat where he can talk from the pulpit and speak his mind about what he thinks about the game. And he gets asked a number of reverential questions. And I will say he offers some interesting answers with a level of self-awareness, with a level of humbleness that I appreciate. And the biggest thing that my takeaway from everything that he said was, of course, about the rollback. That Augusta National Golf Club and the Masters Tournament support the governing bodies of the game, USGA and the RNA, in implementing a rollback at the highest levels of competition. And that they will, you know, once all that kind of gets sorted out, they'll find a way to support that. Which is interesting because when Fred Ridley was the head of the USGA, it wasn't really that way. But I think at the time, maybe his views have evolved. I've never asked him that question. I've never heard him answer that question about why maybe views have evolved on that. Or maybe he's always held that and just didn't feel like it was the right time to do it in the position he was in as the president of the USGA as opposed to a permanent staffer of the USGA. Those are differences that are important. But for him to come out and say, hey, I support this thing, that's a big vote of confidence. Because the PGA Tour doesn't really like it. The PGA of America doesn't really like it. The RNA likes it. They're fine with it, and obviously the USGA likes it. They're both the bodies that propose it. So now you've got three of the four majors coming out and saying, hey, we're cool with this, which is kind of going to put the PGA of America in the corner. They can decide whether they want to continue to play with the current standard of ball, whenever that standard changes, or they can get behind this current one. It'll put them in a weird situation if they and the PGA Tour just kind of say, yeah, we're just going to use the old one, and we're going to create our own ball standards. And that would create bifurcation of the game that I don't even think no one like me rooting for bifurcation could have ever expected. So I think that was important. I think that was important to say, and I like that. He was also asked a bunch of different questions about, particularly about the popularity of golf right now, you know, television ratings. And he was quick to point out, you know, you draw your own conclusions kind of thing, but the ratings being what they are probably tells you a little bit of something about, for one, how people consume golf on linear TV anymore. And I think that's fair to say. There are more people than ever consuming their entertainment via, you know, streaming, via mobile devices. They're not just sitting in front of a television and watching it. And so, to a degree, the poor TV numbers that we see from the PGA Tour, and by the way, I will give a shout-out to the PGA Tour, they were up 20% on the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, for the Texas Open. They had a better field, and obviously the finish with Akshay Batty and Denny McCarthy was fascinating. So they did pretty well TV-wise compared to the prior year, last year, when this was played. Same slot, just before the Masters, albeit the week before Easter instead of the week after Easter. But most of the other data points suggest, you know, hey, there are fewer people interested in golf. There's not much traction for LIV. They did about 205-ish thousand viewers over the weekend on Saturday and Sunday. They are what they are. They are who they are. They aren't growing. It's not growing. It's not getting better. We've got enough data points, I think, at this point to tell us that's the case. So, you know, Ridley kind of more or less saying the division in golf is probably not a good thing. I think people are kind of upset about that. And, that thesis is not mind-blowingly original. I think that a lot of people feel that way. A lot of people will tell you they feel that way. And I thought that was interesting. Christine Brennan from USA Today asked an interesting question of Chairman Ridley and said, basically, you know, Caitlin Clark has inspired record viewership for women's college basketball. I mean, something like 18 million people, 19 million people, whatever it was. I forget the exact number this minute. But for the first time in history, more people watched the women's NCAA final than the men's NCAA final. And maybe that's a watershed moment, or is it a singular person? Whatever it is, why hasn't that translated to someone like Nelly Korda, who's won four times in a row in the LPGA, or for that matter, to the Augusta National Women's Am? Now, I'll take a little umbrage with that, because the Augusta National Women's Am ratings were up like 10 or 12% this year over last year. And that's when Rose Zhang, a player with a media following, a media background, you know, a story, won. So maybe it's starting to catch on a little bit better. I think the problem with Nelly Korda is that she's winning on cable. I'm just going to be honest. I mean, I'm not putting down Golf Channel, but she won her first event in January, right? And then she took several weeks off. She went ahead and won in Los Angeles. Again, that was not the best time for that to have happened. Just, a cable event that doesn't really have a whole lot of name recognition. Then she wins in a playoff when really they showed like 40 minutes of the tournament. So there was no time to even build up to that because of the weird coverage situation they had that week with the weather delay and the Champions Tour going at the same time, the same time zone. So to have her win then a match play tournament where she was up a zillion, and match play tournaments tend to not view as well anyway, I think the framing of the question was a little strange from Christine, but I get what she's trying to say. And that is that Caitlin Clark is his kind of tour de force, so to speak. And Fred Ridley said as much. Said, I love basketball, and I have to be candid, I've never really watched a lot of women's basketball, but I watched four games of Caitlin Clark's run, and she's great. And we hope that we need to do more as a club. We need to do more investing in building women's golf and all that stuff. And that's great. I believe he is genuine about that. We'll see what happens at the Chevron. I mean, if the storyline holds and she wins a fifth in a row, ties the LPGA all-time wins record for consecutive wins, and does it by winning her second major championship, I think some things are going to change. That's just me. Ridley was asked if the club would ever consider hosting a Solheim Cup or an LPGA major of some kind. And they've said they've talked about that. I think he acknowledges that every year. Like, hey, we've been asked the question. That's happened. But, the odds of that are, I think, pretty low. But all in all, what I really find interesting in hearing Fred Ridley talk is that he really seems to be pretty well aware of his position in golf, that what he says carries weight, what he can do with that weight for good. And I think predominantly is focused on for good, not only for the Masters tournament experience. He talked about the map and flag offsite, across Washington, the new hospitality area where it's like $17,000 a day, all inclusive. That's just amazing to me that people are paying that, but they want to be at the Masters, and that they're going to implement underground parking for the players starting next year. And they're going to do a whole bunch of different stuff. Right. And at the same time, wanting to talk about the Augusta National Women's AM and investing in the Augusta Municipal Golf Course, known as the Patch. They're going to redo it, and they're going to have Tom Fazio and Bo Welling be the architects who help bring that in, and hopefully they have that for 2026. It's an interesting balance of trying to talk about the tournament, trying to talk about the state of golf, trying to talk about what they're working on, what they're trying to invest in, women's golf, drive, chip, and putt, municipal golf, while at the same time trying to talk about the future of the Masters tournament. It's just a wide-ranging set of questions. And I think Fred Ridley handles it extremely well in that role. And I'm not a butt kisser kind of guy. I find that pretty admirable. You got to know a little about a lot of things to be able to do that pretty well. And I think he does a great job with it, especially being the guy who's effectively but he's the chairman of a private club. It'd be like asking our club president to talk about the state of professional golf because we host a couple USGA qualifiers a year. It would be on a different plane, right? But Fred Ridley handles it very well. So I think it would be worth your time to check out the news conference, the transcript of it, if you can. Years ago, I got castigated for sharing the links to transcripts. But just go to asapsports.com. That's where they keep most of the transcripts, and they publish them usually a few hours after the interview's done. There's three little buttons. You click on like latest ones, click on the Masters, and you can read Fred Ridley's. It's very good. It's worth your read. And you can check out all the other players. I mean, they do like 25 of these pre-tournament at the Masters. They do it better than anybody. A mixture of kind of in a flash area, outside scoring and the clubhouse, and then the ones that are in the press building, which that place is reportedly incredible. And I've not been to the Masters since 2011 or 12, I think 11. And I was with NBC Sports at the time. And when I lost my job with NBC Sports, I vowed to never return to the Masters unless it was under a credential I earned for Golf News Net. And then life kind of got in the way. Building a business for one, but two, my daughter will have her 8th birthday this Sunday. She's born around the Masters. She was supposed to be born Masters Sunday 2016. Fortunately, that didn't happen because then she would be forever associated with Jordan Spieth putting a couple in the drink on 12. But that, to me, is, you know, if her birthday is around the Masters, and it is, then that's the end of it. I'm not going to go to Augusta for 2 days or come in early or late or whatever. Like, not doing that. That's just not how I feel about it. So I hope someday to get back there and do it for GNN. That may start to change later this year. You know, so for 2025, as I've probably mentioned on the show before, we are working on a streaming TV channel. I don't have a formal date for you yet when that will launch on streaming platforms. My hope is by middle of June, by the U.S. Open. I would love to have a premiere at the end of May, and we're actually having some really exciting final conversations about a lot of that. So that may change in the future, but I'm looking forward to someday getting back to what will be no doubt be a very different place than when I last saw it in person in 2011. All right, that's going to do it for us today on the show. Tomorrow we'll find a way to talk about something. I assume that the weather forecast is going to stay what it is and be pretty ugly. So maybe we'll talk a little bit about what the week looks like with the weather information that we have by the time we get to recording this tomorrow. See what action we get in. Maybe Greg Norman will lunge at somebody. Who knows? But we'll talk about it all tomorrow. Get a hold of me, Ryan at thegolfnewsnet.com, on Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Ryan Ballingy. I'm on Facebook and YouTube at Ryan Ballingy Golf. And Golf News Net is on all of those services at the handle Golf News Net. Check out Golf News Net Radio this week. We don't have the Masters coverage. That's the Sirius XM, but they're going to do a great job. They do a great job all the time. But we may have something for you for the final major of the year. Stay tuned with that. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you next time on Two Off the First.